So, Chris, welcome to Soul Towers. So nice you could join us.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
I mean, I think growing up in the 70s, I was really spoilt for soul acts in the charts. It was all over the place. And when you get a lot of your songs have obviously been remixed and brought out sort of later in the 80s, which is great. And how does that come about? Did someone come to you and just say, or?
No, actually, because anybody can do anything. Once they're released, they're released. But if they want our backing, then they have to be good. Because if they're not, well, they just get on with it, you know. We were very, very fortunate, and I think I'm right in saying this, we were the only ones at that period whose remixes all came in the charts again, because we had three that all came in again. You to Me, Can't Get By and Feel the Force all came back in the same year, as did the album. You know, so I always remember John Peel saying to us, we were doing Top of the Pops, and he was sat with Anne Nightingale. And I always remember him saying, guys, you should release your whole catalogue. He says, every single one of them will be hits again. And we hadn't thought about it because, like I say, we had nothing to do with it. You know, that first one came out of the blue. In fact, I didn't even like it at first, to be quite honest with you, because I just didn't like it, you know. And it went into the charts so quickly, so that then the company decided to bring Ken Gold, who wrote You to Me, back in to remix Can't Get By Without You. And then we said, well, you might as well do Force at the same time. And the three of them came back in the charts.
Those two songs were written by Ken and Mickey Denton. So your third hit, when you were writing that song, did you feel you had to sort of keep some of the style? Because that did very well as well, third song.
That doesn't come into our way of thinking, to be honest with you. Even with our own songs. Every song is just a fresh approach. And as a matter of fact, You Never Know What You're Missing, which is the song in question, we'd written way before we met Ken and Mickey, before we had You to Me and Can't Get By. We'd written that a long time before. And we just decided at the time that we didn't want to become a Ken Gold, Mickey Den sort of, like, as fantastic as they were. So we went with a ballad. Now, it wasn't as big a hit as them, but it was a hit nevertheless. That immediately gives me and Eddie more confidence, and the record more confidence, to look beyond just the obvious. So it improved our writing. And then Ken came back. We actually recorded the 4 From 8 album after that, because we wanted to get into what we were more into before we met Ken and Mickey. And although it wasn't a commercial success, it was a fantastic album. And basically, it's sort of like, it identified us as a band that had a little bit more than just a pop front.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for hit records, it was a little bit too far away from your You to Me, Can't Get By. So we had to go back to Mickey, and Ken wrote Whenever You Want My Love. We started to record Feel the Force, Raining Through My Sunshine, which were our next two.
Yeah.
And basically, that's how it went.
Brilliant.
To become just somebody's puppet, you know.
Looking at the new album, which came out, which was 2022 now, but it's your first album for 40 years. How was getting back into the studio and sort of writing new material again? Well, I guess you've been sort of trying new things out and so on, but how was that, just getting back into it?
Well, first of all, we've never ever not been in the studio ever. We've always been, because we got our own studio, so me and Eddie were writing all the time, and them songs, the only outlet we had was to do them on stage, because we didn't have a record company.
Right.
And in them days, we didn't have the technical know-how to do it from home. And it was when Ed died that, number one, we had to make a big decision whether to replace him and bring in another singer or not. Dave and I said, no, we're not going to do that. Number one, because he can't be replaced.
Yeah.
And number two, we wanted to remain the real thing. And nobody can say that we're not the real thing, because we actually formed the band. It's just the real thing minus two. Mm. And the reason why we were able to do that is, A, I sung 98% of the lead vocals anyway.
Yeah.
So they still had the sound. We still had the sound.
Yeah.
And because of technology and with the help of our musicians, we were able to incorporate Eddie's voice when we do it live. So we still had the three-part harmony. Brilliant. On stage, even though there's only three of us. Because don't forget, me and Eddie were singing together all the time. So we had a blend that became obvious over the years, you know. So going in to do this album was actually the next best phase, because we knew how to do it then. And we had the platform to be able to do it, because all of a sudden, we could, A, we had complete control over what we wanted to record. B, it wasn't costing us anything, because it was our own studio and everything. And I honestly think it's the best thing I've ever done, ever.
Excellent. So
it's definitely the best vocals that I personally have ever done.
It's a lovely album. And, you know, the songs, are they been sort of written over the years and then put together as an album, or are they, do you do them all in a tight sort of year or so?
I would say three quarters of them were new, which I've written.
Yeah,
that was another thing I had to get used to, writing without Eddie, because you know, me and Eddie had sort of written together for 40 years, and then all of a sudden he wasn't there. So that was one thing I had to get used to. So, but anyway, we did it, and I wrote three quarters of the songs within that year of recording the album. And then other really nice songs, like we did a new version of Children of the Ghetto.
Yeah.
We did things like Living on the Frontline and things like that. They were songs that Eddie and I had written, but not actually recorded.
Right.
So we were able to incorporate them into the new album. Things like Daddy Dear was a song that we wrote, when we were only infants, you know, to the business. Mm. Eddie wrote it. And basically what I did is, because it was always, I felt, a great song and nobody had heard it before, really, I decided to add something to it and bring it up to date. And that was incorporated onto the album as well. So it's a mixture, but it's mainly new material.
Brilliant. I've got a few questions about how you and Eddie write together and so on. But just ahead of that, which song on the album is, I know it's difficult, but, you know, which would you pick as a particular favourite?
What I particularly like, and I would be particularly proud to play the song that we did on Jules Holland on New Year's Eve, which is Children of the Ghetto.
Children of the Ghetto. I had a feeling it'd be that one.
Shalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalalal
Children of the Ghetto from the album Brand New Day, The Real Thing. It's a wonderful song. And Chris is still with us here at Soul Towers. And we were talking earlier about how you sort of write songs with your brother, Eddie. How does it, you know, if you're both writing a song, is there a song that's more Eddie and a song that's more you? Or is it 50-50? Or does it just change all the time?
It changes all the time. Sometimes a song is almost completed, and I'll play it to Ed, or he'll play it to me. And there'll be just maybe something that we think, could do with a little bit of a lift there, or maybe the lyric's not completed. Because it's amazing how sometimes you get stuck for lyrics. Sometimes it can take you a month, and sometimes it can take you 2 minutes to actually for the ideas to start flowing with the lyrics and things. Or I will completely change the bass or something, the bass guitar on it. And so it just depends. Sometimes there's a lot to do on them. Sometimes it isn't, you know, sometimes it's just a case of just adding a vital cog in the wheel that just makes it turn.
Does it just sort of naturally come that you take certain parts and Ed takes others, or do you sometimes sort of perhaps even argue about which bit?
I'll always do the bass part mainly. Mm-hmm. Even if Ed's got a definite idea for a bass line, I'll do that, but I will add to it. All the vocals I do, all the vocals that are within my range. Mm-hmm. So that's three sets of vocals.
Yep.
And then Eddie will always do the top one, the falsetto vocal.
Yes.
But I can actually do that now that Eddie's not here. But
right.
That used to be the order of, you know, it wasn't worth bringing dragging Dave in,
right,
and dragging Ray in, because basically there were only demos at that point of our songs.
Yeah.
And I could do all there, but they were only going to be singing the parts that I was singing anyway. So until the actual recording of the song came about, Eddie and I used to just do all the vocals on our songs, on the demos.
So Eddie's sort of about 8 years your senior. So
yeah.
Did you start working together seriously in the music business?
Eddie was already a prolific songwriter,
mm-hmm,
while he was teaching me how to play chords and things like that. Because when me and Dave formed the band, we had to have a better way of working out harmonies and things, rather than just listening to what's on the record and listening and trying to pick that part off. So gradually I started to be able to play a few chords on the guitar so that we could actually sit down and harmonise. You know, we could sit down and harmonise. Eddie taught me that. And in that meantime, I then started to knock out a few songs. And gradually the songs got a little bit better, a little bit better. Started having more form to them. That's when Ed would come in and say, well, try this here, blah. And, blah, you know, and so we started to develop proper songs together, songs that, you know, probably had more input than me at that point in time as to the finished thing. But nevertheless, I was writing proper songs, completed songs, and they were getting better and better, you know. So by the time You to Me and that came along, I was writing prolifically as well.
So Eddie didn't just suddenly join your band, which must have been a great feeling. It was all happened on a gradual process.
Yeah, I mean, we were right up there before Eddie joined the band. I mean, we'd been on tour with David Essex.
Yeah.
I was doing mainly all the jingles like Cadbury's Dairy Milk for Jeff Wayne and all that. And we'd had a couple of near misses with our records ourselves. We had a fantastic manager, probably the best soul, knowledgeable jazz person in the country, who introduced a lot of the soul music to this country, a guy called Tony Hall.
Yep.
And so we were right up there. I mean, we were on the verge of cracking before Ed joined. But it just come to the point where it was obvious that he was going to join at some point, because I wanted him to join. I wanted to be with him together, because we were doing everything together. We were doing all the writing and things. And he joined us, I would say, 6 months before we got You to Me or everything. Maybe a little bit more, maybe. But not much, you know.
Was it the Opportunity Knocks thing, for those of us who remember that show, your sort of big break, or was it already coming together then?
No, that was our big break. That was our big early break.
Mm-hmm.
That is what sort of like took us from just being a localised group, harmonising and doing the clubs around about Manchester and Liverpool, things like that, you know. Once we did Opportunity Knocks and we won it, we were then going all around the country. We were known all around the country and building up a cult following. And in fact, we did have a song called Plastic Man, which we did on Top of the Pops, you know, because it almost broke. It broke into the number 56 or something like that. So Opportunity Knocks is what enabled us to say, shall we say, turn professional properly as a unit.
And to get on a show like that in those days, I mean, nowadays you've got to join a big long queue and have open auditions and so on. I don't know, how's someone get on Opportunity Knocks then? How'd they do it?
Same.
Really?
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You used to have to do auditions. We had to audition for it. They were made up when we did it, when we did the audition. They were over the moon because they'd never, ever had a band like us on, you know. And they really took to us, the producers and that. And even when we lost on the second week, they brought us back to do things with other artists, you know, some maybe backing vocals and things for them and things. We had a lovely relationship with them, you know.
Does everyone know you for Liverpool, if they did, you know, because you could be American for listening to the songs and so on. Was that something that...
Opportunity Knocks, they knew we were from Liverpool. But, you know, you've got to understand, it's soon forgotten, isn't it, really? Yeah. You know, once, you know, a couple of months have gone by, you then develop a sort of cult following. People that, like, really liked you and really want to, how are they getting on? That kind of thing. But, it was a fantastic break for us. It really was. And you needed it then, because there was nothing else.
Was that when did the name come about? Because I know that it was the Coke slogan, wasn't it? The real thing.
Yeah, well, we were doing Opportunity Knocks. We were with our new manager, Tony Hall. Mm-hmm. And he just happened to say that, you know, you're very, very raw, which we were. And you're not vocally perfect, because we were called vocal perfection.
Right.
And we could understand where he was coming from, because we were dead young, dead rough, but that was our charm. But nevertheless, if we had made it then, people would soon have jumped on the fact that we were not vocally perfect, and they would have done a lot of damage with our name, Vocal Perfection. So Tony was driving around Piccadilly and saw the sign, it's the real thing. And that's how we became the real thing.
Fabulous. Well, thanks so much for joining us here at Soul Towers, Chris.
Great stuff. Okay. Come in and say hello anyway.